someone, to raise someone, to educate and to bring someone up with a goal, with a purpose. Tarbiyat happens first by having a purpose and a goal, and then putting in different methodologies of practice, a practice code, to raise someone to reach that goal. This is what tarbiyat means. And Allah has used many methods of tarbiyat, of nurturing, throughout history and in the Quran and by the prophets in order to raise people to reach the goals that he has set out for them. When we look at these different methods of tarbiyat and nurturing, we see that Allah, for example, uses the methodology or the way of fear. He calls it inzar, warning the people. This is a method of raising people, bringing them closer to the goal that Allah has made for them. So Allah wanted them to come close to Him. When we get close to Allah, we will find happiness. We will find our goal. We will find our potential ending. When we get close to Allah, how did Allah and what did Allah put in place in order to bring us closer to Him? What is it that Allah did and how does He do it? So first thing you see in the Quran, He uses fear as a method of bringing people closer, rectifying them and making them better. For example, you see that He makes us fear death or the grave or hell. You see, it's a method. By us knowing that there's a grave, knowing that we're going to die, knowing that we're going to go to hell, it might rectify us and make us obey Allah in a certain way. This is one method He uses. Another method that Allah uses is reward. He gives incentive. And He shows that this is also a method that Allah has espoused in the Quran. And the prophets have taught. And this is, for example, by offering incentive for your actions. If you do good, then you'll be rewarded for it. There's Jannat. There's many other really good rewards that Allah is offering. This is an incentive program Allah has to make us do things that He wants us to do in order that we reach our potential. This is another method that we use. For example, another method Allah uses in the Quran is to appeal to our conscience. Appeal to a conscience that we have, that inner voice that we have. For example, when He speaks about ghibat in Surah Hujarat, He says, do not backbite your brother. And then He says, do you like to eat the flesh of your dead brother? Now why is He saying, why is He asking this question? What does that mean? It means that naturally, instinctively, within ourselves, when we look at eating the flesh of our own brother, cannibalistic, it goes against our nature, right? It goes against our conscience. And hence Allah is appealing to that in order to prevent us from doing this wrong. This is another method of training that Allah uses in the Quran. Now all of these are methods that we also use with our children. All of these are methods that we also use with our children. For example, fear. Sometimes we deal with them with fear, right? And put fear in them. That if you do this, you know, this is what's going to happen to you. Or incentive program. If you fast, you know, then you'll get an Eid present. A present on Eid. What is that? Incentive program. Same thing Allah is doing, but we are doing in our own way. We do the same thing. Now, when you look at all these methods, and I just give that to you, and I just put it forward to you so we understand something from it. When we look at these methods that Allah uses in the Quran, and Allah is okay with, when we look at all these methods, we see that really, what is that one method that Allah has used, that He has emphasized, and Of all these methods, which method is the most effective? When you look at all the methods Allah used, for example, hellfire is a method. Jannat is a method, right? Now you have, for example, conscience is a method. What is the most effective method that Allah has used and that He wants us to pay attention to and to come closer to Him through that method? This is what we want to know. Because when you look at fear, brothers, how much has fear of hell made you change? Tell me, how many of you thought about hellfire today? You know, how many of you thought about that? That hellfire, I need to stay away from that. Let me do something. How many of you thought about that, right? Or your grave, or death. How many of you thought about death today? All right, last week. A month? You know, any time? Look at it. I mean, really, Allah, He uses that, and it is a method, but how many of us are really affected by it? Or Jannat, for example. We read it in the Quran. Allah describes it in such a graphic way. You know, all the things in Jannat, you know. I mean, you can have whatever you want, however you want it. For real. Not like Burger King. It's for real, right? You know, you really can have something the way you want it, and that's the way it's going to come to you. Just for your pleasure. And here we are. How many of us have thought about Jannat? Or Hurul Een? Allah describes Hurul Een, companions. You know, pleasure. I mean, how many times have you thought about Jannat today? Did anything that we do, for example, prayer and this and that, has it been for Allah, okay, I'm praying this and you promised me that. Give me a house in this neighborhood, in Jannat. Did we think about that today? We didn't. How about last week? We don't. So these methods Allah uses, really, are they effective? Maybe they have some use somewhere, and that's why Allah is using them. But then there's one method that Allah has used in the Quran and in our creation. That is by far the most effective method that Allah has used in order to bring people closer to Him. And that method, my friends, is what we want to learn. And this is, unfortunately, that method which is usually ignored or overlooked. People don't actually pay attention to it. Don't focus on it. If you read, unfortunately, if you read the books of Akhlaq, you don't find it there that much. Sometimes, you know, they might mention it as a passing remark. It's not even emphasized. This is how sad the situation is. And try to find these things, you know, like, for example, in a book of Akhlaq, you know, see that, okay, where is this method that Allah is speaking of in the Quran and Ahlul Bayt are speaking of in Hadith and also Munajat and Duas, but we don't see written about or emphasized amongst the people. What is that one method? That's what I want to speak about in these 3 days that we are here. What is the most effective method Allah has used to bring us closer to Him, and how important it is for us to focus on that method of training, of tarbiyat, that Allah has used, and how important it is for us to use that method amongst ourselves, especially in raising our children. Because that is the most effective method that Allah has used, Ahlul Bayt have spoken of, and we will understand, inshallah, in these few days. And that method is, my friends, very simple. Allah has shown this method of all the methods. The most effective is the fact that Allah loves you. Allah is in love with you. And He wanted us to know that. My friends, when a person just thinks a little bit to the fact that Allah, the Creator, God, is in love with me, this is the most effective way of a person being rectified, of a person growing and being nurtured, and Allah kept this for us. Let's talk about it. Send the salawats. La ilaha illallah. What is the topic? The topic is Allah loves us, not I love Allah. That's not the topic. You know, how many of you love Allah? So a raise of hands. Very good, alhamdulillah. I'll put it down. I don't want to embarrass you, you know. Alright. How many of you love Allah? Really, do you love Allah? If I claim to love Allah, then the first thing is that I am lying. You might be like, but we do love Allah. No, we don't love Allah. We don't love Allah. My friends, how do you say that? Well, you know, here's the thing, right? Imam has said, in the hadith, Imam has said that hubbu dunya wa hubbu Allah la yajtami'ane fi qalbin wahid. He said that the love of dunya and the love of Allah cannot be in one heart. So if you have an ounce of love for dunya, you do not have love for Allah. In other words, that doesn't make us grow. You see, the issue is not about us loving Allah. The issue is Allah loving us. That's a reality. Allah loves me. That's a reality. I love Allah, questionable. Really big questionable. Let's bring it down one more level. Do you love Imam Hussein? No one wants to raise their hands. My friends, really, you know, do you love Imam Ali? I ask you this question. Everyone says, yes, of course we love. That's why we are Shias. And they say, no, you're Shias because of many other reasons, not because you love them, my friends. Not because you love them. This is where we have to be really careful. Understand? If you love someone, again, if you have ever been in love in your life with anyone, right? You will know what love is. You will know what love is. There are some qualities a lover has. Simple qualities. And if you fall in love with someone, right, you will see, you will have those qualities in you. One of those qualities is that when you're in love, you cannot think about anything else. You can't think about anything else when you're in love. You see, for example, us saying that we love Imam Ali, when's the last time we thought about him? Right? When's the last time, even today, you know, that, you know, we said that Ali, you know, or Imam Hussein, anything like that, you know? We have to actually organize a majlis to remember Imam Hussein. You see, again, there, you know, if you want to see a lover, you know, look at Maitham al-Tammar. Maitham al-Tammar, you see, he was a lover. Imam Ali just told him that, Maitham, you will be hung by this tree. It was a pod then, a pod. You will be hung on this tree, you know. As soon as Imam Ali said that, Maysam watered that tree every day of his life. That was his goal in life. Even the other close companions of Imam Ali used to look at Maysam and call him crazy. They called him crazy. You know, this guy is crazy. He lost it. My friends, that's a lover. It's a lover. Someone who's like completely finished. That's it. He has floored. He can't think of anything else. This is a lover. So far be it that we are lovers. You know what we are? We are people that Allah and Ahlul Bayt love. That's more like it. They are capable and they love us. This is the subject that we are talking about. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allah used this method of showing His love for us to train us, to make us better. And we ignored that method. How many times have we thought about Allah loving us? How many times in our life have we thought that Allah, you are in love with me? With me? How many times have we thought about that? You think Allah is not in love with you? It's very simple and basic fact, right? Allah does love us. Why is it that we're not thinking about it? La ilaha illallah. These are things we want to go into. Let me just give you a few examples of it from hadith so that we understand it better. Send the loud salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
La ilaha illallah. If you read Dua Kumail and Alhamdulillah that you all do, right? If you pay attention to what Imam Ali is saying, then probably you will understand this one statement of Imam Ali, which apparently is very illogical. Of all the dua, when you read it, right, there's one statement that Imam Ali makes is very rational and very illogical. Right? He says that Allah sabartu ala adabik, fa kayfa asbiru ala firakik. Translation: Allah, I can tolerate your azab. I will tolerate your azab, but how can I tolerate your separation? Now tell me, my friends, look at it logically and rationally. Can anyone tolerate the punishment of Allah? This is Allah's azab. It's not a joke. Azab from Allah. Imagine that. Can anyone tolerate that? It's impossible to tolerate Allah's azab. Impossible. So Imam, why are you saying this, that you can tolerate it, when it's an impossibility? It's an irrational statement. But you know where Imam Ali is taking us? He's taking us on a very high level and plane in thinking. Imam Ali is saying, listen to what I'm saying. If you understood that the azab of Allah, the punishment of Allah, is impossible to tolerate, then understand that I'm comparing something that is impossible, like the punishment of Allah, and comparing that to separation from Him, which is much more difficult to bear than Allah's azab. Did you see that? Imam Ali is taking us on that level and telling us, listen, this is impossible, and I'm telling you, worse than that impossible is for you to be separated from Allah's love. Now, it needs a little bit more than that, right? What is the worst punishment on the Day of Judgment? What is the worst punishment that Allah can give you on the Day of Judgment? I mean, the worst thing that can happen in hell. Fire? Scorpions? Scorpions made of fire? No. Molten lava? Snakes made of molten lava? I mean, imagine all the horrible, nasty, and dreadful punishments that Allah can give you there. Do you know what is the most severest punishment on the Day of Judgment? And who is it for? You know, again, hadith says, Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam. Imam says that the most severest punishment on the Day of Judgment will be given to those who had a hand in killing the Imams. anyone who killed the imams or had a hand in it, the worst punishment will be given to them. The worst, the most severest punishment. What is that? What is that punishment, Imam, that you're talking about that is so severe that it is meant for those who kill the imams? Can you imagine that? I mean, Ibn Muljam, for example, those who killed him, this punishment is meant for them. What is that? Imam says, explaining what that punishment is, he says that on that day, in the day of judgment, Allah will turn his back on these people. He will turn his back on these people. And you know what? These people who killed the imams, you can count those nasty figures like Yazid and all of these things that we send lanat on, right? Count those criminals of humanity who did such a crime of killing the kindest people on earth. Imagine those people, and Allah is saying, the imam is saying that Allah is going to turn his back on them. He is going to turn his back on them. What does that mean? You know, on that day when Allah will refuse to talk to them, these people on the day of judgment know they're going to hell. But you know, there'll be a gut-wrenching pain that they will feel. And they will start crying. Tears will come. They'll start shaking that, why isn't he talking to us? At least talk to us. They know they're going to the hellfire, but what's more painful is the fact that Allah doesn't want to talk to them. La ilaha illallah. From here you understand how much does Allah love you. That it will be, that pain will come forward when you say that, Allah, please talk to me. Tell me that I'm bad at least. Say to me that I'm bad. My friends, Allah deals with us with love. That's how he comes across to us. He wants us to understand that. He says, my first thing is that I love you. That's how I deal with you. That's how we understand how much Allah loves us. Wow, subhanallah. Now we say that Allah, on that day, the worst enemies of mankind will be crying just because you refuse to talk to them. Just because you refuse to talk to them, that's it. You're like, you know, how much are you in love with us like that? You know, a lot of it is known through how parents deal with children. For example, for a child, a toddler, parents' love for them, the mother's love for that toddler is everything. You see that? It's everything. When a mother, for example, gets upset, you see the whole world of this child is shaken. Whole world is shaken of this child. He's like, you know, why is she upset? Why is she upset? When she gets upset, right? Really, that's how it is. Much more than that is Allah's love for us. How can I explain this? How can I explain this? How can anyone explain this, you know? This is something that should be so simple for us to understand, but still we have such a hard time grasping it. And there's a reason for that also, which we will get into. But I want you to first understand this. How can I explain it? Let me tell you a story, so from there you understand. Send the salawats. There was a battle that was raging on. Battle. People are fighting. Battle was raging on, and a mother lost her child, a toddler, ran away from the tent, right, from her tent, into the battlefield. It wasn't in the battlefield, but he left the tent. The mother became so devastated, you know, that losing a son, and he went out in danger. There's a battle going on, arrows are flying, people are getting killed, and so she frantically runs after this child. Through all those arrows, through all the danger, she doesn't even pay attention to herself, runs after this child. And everyone just looks at her. She has no care for herself. She's just looking for her child, shouting out, where's my son? Where's my son? as she goes about without caring for any danger that's around her, she's crying out, and the other people look at her without any fear. They see the fact that she's not afraid of anything. She's oblivious of anything around her. When that scene was seen, everyone was affected by her. They were like looking at her, affected by her, and looking at that as a teachable moment. As a teachable moment, Rasulullah came in the middle of the... She found the child, she held the child, grasped her child into her lap. Rasulullah came forward. That moment he said, stop everyone. Everyone come here, stop the battle. I mean, his people, come here. This is more important than the battle. This is more important than the fight. Come over here. He brought everyone together, and after bringing everyone together, he said, look at that. You saw that? That mother went after the child without any fear. How much love do you think she has for the child? Do you think she will let any harm come to the child? Do you think that she will let any problem come to the child? They said, no. Looking at her and what she did and how she behaved, they said, no, of course not. She will never allow that to happen. So you think that she loves him? Yes, he does. He says, Allah loves you more than her. Allah loves you more than her. Rasulullah, stop the battle just to teach this lesson. Allah loves you more than this mother. You think that Allah will let any harm come to you? You think that Allah is like that? He's going to let harm come to you? He's that much in love with you. So much love does Allah have for you. This is the way that Allah wants us to come close to Him, through this love that He has for us. Understand it, comprehend it, grasp it, and then everything will go forward. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, I will just mention one more place about love of Allah, and you know, inshallah, we will go towards the ending for today, right? Really, this is a subject, my friends, that can change our life if we try to grasp it. It's not something that is philosophical or anything like that. Nothing like that. It is just you and Allah. And if we can just understand this, everything will be okay for us after that. Everything will be okay. Just if you can understand this point, that Allah loves us. You know, one of the places where you can see what this meaning of Allah's love for us is in places where the imams are speaking to Allah, and that is in du'as. That is in du'as. You know, and this, if you have read one of those du'as, and there are some du'as that are called munajat. Munajat, you know, are, you know, du'as that you say in silence. You know, you might have read in Sahifah Sajadiyah, there's a section of du'as and a section of munajat. And there are other places also, right? Munajat are mentioned. Just let me explain to you what this means, right? You see, du'a is, for example, when you, for example, are coming close to a cliff. You know, there's a cliff and you're coming really close to it in your car. Your brakes have failed, but you're still on the road. The cliff is there. And you're approaching it, you hit the brakes, they don't work, you know, then there's a voice that comes from your heart, right? Ya Allah! Voice that comes from your heart, Ya Allah, brakes are not working, and I'm going to go over the cliff, but I'm still on the ground though, right? There's options for me, you know, things like that, right? So what that voice that comes from the heart, when you're on the road going towards a cliff, this voice where you call to Allah is called dua. This is dua. This voice is called dua. This is where dua takes place. Now, if you actually went over the cliff and you're on the way down and there is no ground that you're standing on, you're like hanging in the air going down to imminent, you know, destruction, there it is, now your voice doesn't come out. Now the feeling is different. Now you're like that whispered voice that comes out at that moment is called munajat. Right? This is munajat. Right? When do you do munajat? When you're in that situation. And there is no hope anymore. I'm not hanging to anything. There's no help for me. That's it. I'm on the way down. Now, whatever comes out at that moment is called munajat. And in munajat, you see the imams, when they do munajat, they are whispering those things that are so urgent, so necessary, so important, that we need to look at those things. Now, in one of those munajat, which is called munajat-o-sha'baniya, which is a very well-known munajat, one of the unique qualities of this munajat is that all the imams have read it. All the imams have read this munajat as a practice. Munajat-o-sha'baniya. In munajat-o-sha'baniya of Imam Ali alayhi salam, understand this. There's the statement that Imam is making in that munajat, right? Pay attention to this. He says, Ilahi, lam yakun li hawlun fantaqil bihi an ma'siyatik illa fi waqtin ayqadtani li mahabbatik. Imam Ali is saying that Allah, I do not have any power, any control to stop myself from disobeying you. I cannot. I mean, disobedience to you, I don't have any power to stop it. You know, you know, if it's haram or something wrong you're doing, right? Imam is saying, I have no power to stop myself from doing disobedience to you, from doing ma'siyat and guna. I have no power. Illa, except at that time where you arouse me with your love. And the only thing that can help me to stop disobedience to you is when I understand that you love me. That you love me. No amount of, you know, knowledge is going to make you stop from sinning. And this is where we come to now. One of the methods that, you know, Allah uses the method of love just for this reason, because it has so much power that it can stop us from sinning. It can stop us from doing wrong. It can make us obey Allah because it's through love. And that love has more power than any other method. It is more effective than any other method. But here's what we do. We rely on other methods more than this method. For example, the method of ma'rifat, knowledge. We rely heavily on that for tarbiyat. You know, how do you want people to change? Teach them. Give them enough information, enough knowledge, that this knowledge will now make them stop anything wrong or make them do good. That's what it is. Is there an echo or do I hear myself? I don't know. I mean, is it bothering you or is it okay? All right? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, understand this, what I'm saying. I'm making a comparison here. It's very important. It's very important for us to know this, right? How much we rely on knowledge to rectify us. And it is so misplaced, this reliance, that it is like mind-boggling. Why are we relying on knowledge so much? Yes, there are hadiths regarding knowledge. Yes, it says that knowledge is a great thing. But knowledge has a purpose, a, you know, reason. But we misplace it. We think that knowledge is going to save us. That knowledge and information is going to save us. And is going to rectify us and lead us to salvation. I don't know where we got that idea from. But let me see this. Let's see what knowledge does. You see, you know what knowledge does? We gain knowledge. It's a good thing. For example, you are made aware of something, and we hope that this awareness that you have is going to stop you from doing wrong. Somehow. It's going to stop you from doing wrong. For example, you want to tell your friend, that, hey, listen, smoking is bad, right? So you tell them, watch this documentary, and that will help you to understand it. So, what do you think that friend will do? Right? Next time you meet him, you watch that? No. I mean, and even if he watches it, it's going to change him. Right? And here it is, people think that just by making people aware or giving them information, that's going to make them do that. Right? Since when did knowledge make us do things? How many times do we know that this thing is wrong to do and we still do it? It's wrong to cheat in our taxes. How many of us are guilty of, small little erroneous ways that we have adopted? Tell me, this is how it is. We know it's wrong, but we do it. We know it's right, but we don't do it. Right? So, how is that knowledge helping? Right? But we rely so much on it. We, for example, want our children to know the importance of prayer, and we teach them all the rules of prayer and everything, and think that by knowing how important is prayer, they're going to pray. When did knowledge ever made anyone do anything? It does have a place. It does have, when you want to do something, at least you know what you're doing. Right? But the first oomph of actually wanting to do it is not from knowledge. It's not from knowledge. Knowledge can make a person do right things, but it cannot build his faith in that thing. That's the reason you see that, for example, you teach these children how to obey Allah and this and that and all the rules of Islam. They know all the, 23 rules of the doubts in prayers. The 23 doubts in prayers, how to rectify them. They're experts on that. They give a test also for it in Sunday school, and they got 95. The two wrongs that they have will ever haunt them for the rest of their lives. Salawat ala. But such things happen, and that's what makes people just do things in such a, they think that by teaching them these things, they're going to have faith in it. It doesn't work like that. Right? That's not how you get faith. That's why Allah never emphasized coming through Him through knowledge. Never emphasize that. The emphasis is always on love, and this is where we always relied on knowledge. Look at this. When we want to train our children, what do? Islamic classes. Islamic classes? Why are we doing that? Right away, Islamic classes. Get them, drill them. Drill it so deep in them and so hard in them that, you know what happens with knowledge? Here's what happens with knowledge, my friends. Let me explain to you. You know what knowledge does? Knowledge forces us to do something. Because we know it's right. If we go against it, it's wrong. So that knowledge forces us to do something. Whatever it is. For example, if we don't brush our teeth, we're going to get decay in our teeth, right? We have knowledge of that. So we brush our teeth every day. So knowledge is making us do this. Until when? Until we find a loophole. Until we find a loophole. When someone comes up with a, for example, mouthwash that says, you don't need to brush with this mouthwash. No more brushing. You go with that. This is how it happens. What does knowledge do? It forces you until you find a loophole. That's what happens. You pressure people, force them to do something by drilling them with knowledge. It's the same thing as pointing a gun to their head and making them pray. Pray. You're forced to pray until you find a loophole. Right? That's why whenever you pressure someone to believe in something through knowledge, they're looking for a loophole to get out of it. When does that loophole come? Oh, there's a difference of opinion amongst the Maharaja. A difference of opinion? So what? You want to just leave it? There's a difference of opinion, so we don't need to do that. That's it. They found a loophole, and as soon as they find that opening, wham, they're gone. They're gone. They're out of your clutches. You kept them alive. That's what happens. You teach children knowledge without emphasizing love and bringing them in. You teach them knowledge so they are very good until they reach high school. Once they get through high school, then they're like, oh, you know what? I have my own car now. Now I can do what I want. I have my own friends now. I have a life. You know, so I don't have to go to the masjid. That's the complaint of people, right? As soon as they go into high school, this and that, they're gone. Why is that? Because now they found a loophole. They found a place that they can run away from. Because tarbiyat was never done in the right way. And we thought that by just drilling them with knowledge is going to help them. But it doesn't. And hence, we ended up with people who are now looking for excuses and loopholes instead of finding ways to learn and practice. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. La ilaha illallah. You know, just one more salawat. La ilaha illallah. Well, the importance of knowing that Allah loves us. This is it, my friends. I just wanted to introduce the subject today. 2 days that we have, I'll try to go into some of the details that will help us a lot in this thing. How did Shaitan misguide Adam? You know the story of Adam. I don't want to say it. Adam and Hawa were told by Allah. Adam and Hawa were told by Allah to stay in the Jannah, enjoy yourself, everything you do, but don't go near that tree. Alright, only one rule, don't go near that tree. Yeah, that's it, you know. So, they said okay, they were doing fine. Until Shaitan came to them and misguided them. And obviously that misguidance was so hard on Adam that he cried for hundreds of years. It says 500 years. That's a lot of crying. I mean 500 years of crying. Wow. Subhanallah. You know. 500 years Adam cried in repentance. And then afterwards Allah forgave him. You know. He said alright. 500 years. But what happened, my friends, is the question. You know the story. I don't want to repeat it. Just I'm asking you, how did Shaitan misguide them? Think about it. Think very carefully about it. Allah explains the reason in the Quran how Shaitan misguided them. Allah explains this. Let me read this ayat for you. Send the salawats. He says, وَقَاسَمَهُمَا إِنِّي لَكُمَا لَمِنَ النَّاسِهِينَ. Shaitan misguided Adam by approaching him and swearing and saying, hey, I care for you. I am concerned about you. Really, my heart goes out to you. I'm in love with you. Out of love, I'm giving you this sincere advice. You know, it's a sincere advice. I'm giving you this sincere advice because I love you. You see, Shaitan used the method of love to misguide Adam. I love you. And that was so influential on Adam. Because he knew that love is something special. Love is something special, and hence Adam accepted that. He accepted that, and then you know what happened? He realized his mistake. 500 years he cried and repented because of that one moment he forgot. That one moment he forgot that Allah loves him more than shaitan. If he had kept that in mind, that Allah loves me more than anyone else, he would have never listened to shaitan. Never listened to shaitan. Allah loves me more than you. Who are you claiming to have love for me? You're nothing. Yeah, you might love me, but Allah loves me more. And if you, what you are saying is different than what Allah is saying, then you know what? There's a problem here. The problem here. La ilaha illallah. Allah is telling Adam, Adam, I created all this for you. I created you. I made this Jannat for you. All of this for you. You. Alone, you. It was just you and me. And you, for your own benefit, listen to someone else who just came to you and said, I love you. Don't you know that I love you more? That I care for you more? My friends, this is what makes us do things. Knowing that Allah loves me. Because Allah, you love me. When you ask me to do something, you know what? I will do it. How many of you actually know that Imam Hussein loves you? How many of you know that? That Imam Hussein loves you. You really think about it. How many of us actually understand that Imam Hussein loves me? You know, let's say you come to the majlis and you came here to the speech, right? You were driving here. Tell me, when you were driving, what was in your mind? Whatever it was, think about it. What was in your mind? You might be thinking about different things, you know, listening to the radio. It was like, you know, a routine drive that you come to the masjid. Right? Now tell me, my friends, if you had a dream at home and Imam Hussein came in your dream and he says, please come to the majlis tonight. Please come tonight. And you woke up. And now when you drive to the masjid, is it going to be a different feeling? Imam Hussein, you invited me. You asked me to come. Now you see, there will be a spring. There will be a motivation, an inspiration. My drive will be different. My coming here would be different. Why is it that we need to have a dream to know that Imam Hussein is inviting us? Why is it necessary? Don't we know that? Don't we know that Fatima is inviting us? La ilaha illallah. My friends, you are not here because you are good. You have something. These are things to think about, right? Why are you here? Why are you here at this moment? Think about it. You're not here because you are good, or because you love Imam Hussein. You know why you're here? You're here because there's a man and his family who are lying without a kafan and a shroud in the desert, and whose only guilt was that they had fallen in love with you. The only guilt was that they were in love with you. It's their love that is bringing you here. It's Imam Hussein's love that's bringing you here. You're just responding to that love. Really, you're just responding to that love. Sometimes we go through these things and no one is more grateful for you coming here and you crying for Hussein than the mother of Hussein. No one is more giving more importance than that. Really, Fatima really appreciates it. Bibi Fatima appreciates that you have come here and cried for her son, and you have shed some tears for someone who was killed as a refugee in the ummah of his grandfather. You know, sometimes you need to see these things and then understand that really, how much is it? My friends, you know, I'll tell you something, maybe you can correlate this and probably understand what I'm saying through this. Tell me. Really, the person who matters the most in everyone's life is their mother. Their mother is someone that everyone holds close, and it's the dearest person. For many reasons. The mother has shown her love for her child. She has, she is the one who gave birth to you. She is the one who cradled you in her lap. She is the one who would feed you. She was the one who would stay up because you weren't able to sleep. She is the one who took all these things. Look at your mother. Look at her and see how much do you love her. You know, and this love that you have for her really is a response to the love that she had for you. She loved you, that's why you're loving her back. You're loving her back because of all the things that she has done for you, you appreciate that and you says, Mom, really you're special for me. Now my friends, I have seen this and you have witnessed this also. When a mother dies, it's very difficult for a person. When a mother passes away, it's very difficult for a person, and they lose a lot when their mother dies. That one person who really knows you, the one person who really cared for you, the one person who said stories to you, so much she has done for you, when she passes away, it's a devastating time for anyone. I have seen men cry for their mother. I have seen men cry for their mother. Sometimes you see when your mother passes away, people cry for a month, cry for 3 months, or probably a year. Really, the more you cry shows how much your mother loved you. How much your mother loved you is known through how much you cry back for her. If some people cry for many years for their mother, 2-3 years, they always are crying for their mother. Just shows how much their mother loved them. The extent of your crying is directly related to the extent of the love that the mother had for you. My friends, but I just say this one thing, right? When I looked at people, after a few years, no matter how much you cry for your mother, you'll see that you forget her. Now you only remember her every year when you have a yearly majlis for her, or a yearly jalase for her. And you remember her at that time, you know, just at that moment you remember her. You pass away for her. And when you stop crying, maybe you can go to the grave of your mother and say, Mother, really, I understood the extent that you loved me. Yeah, you love me to the extent that only a few years I remembered you, and that's it, right? You have the right to say that to your mother. This is the extent that you love me. That's why I just responded to your love for 3 years. If you understood that much, maybe now you can understand. And when you go to Fatima, say, Fatima, how much did you love us that no matter how long time is going by, we cannot stop crying for your children? Fatima, how much did you love us? That no matter how much time goes by, whenever I remember you, whenever I remember your children, I cannot help myself but cry. My friends, Hussein was the one who loved you. Hussein is the one who's in love with you. His children are dead. Everyone is dead. And all these people are dead. All his friends are dead, lying outside. And then, you know, on Ashura, Imam Hussein comes to the tent of his one son who's remaining, Imam Sajjad. He comes to his tent and then he gives them, tells him, just wakes him up. Imam Sajjad looks at Imam Hussein, blood smeared on his face and on his shirt. Imam Sajjad asks, Father, what's going on? Imam Hussein says, it's time for me to go to the battle. Imam Sajjad says, but what happened to Abbas that you are going? What happened to Abbas that you're going? He says, my son, everyone is gone.
How about Ali Akbar? They're all gone. Qasim, they're gone. My son, don't ask any more questions. Even Ali Asghar is finished. Even Ali Asghar is finished. And then at that point, Imam Hussein says, my son, I just have one wasiyat for you. Imagine this, Imam Hussein's wasiyat on the day of Ashura. How important must it be? Who is he thinking of on Ashura? Who is he trying to talk to on Ashura? He's telling Imam Sajjad, my wasiyat for you is this. When you go back, give my salam to my Shias. When you go back, give my salam to my Shias and tell them whenever they drink a cold glass of water, remember how thirsty this Hussein was. Oh, how much I miss them on this day. You know how much Imam Hussein missed you. How can I say these things? You know, maybe this will help. You know, this scene, I just saw a scene. When I was a student in Qom, there was a bus stand, a taxi stand that used to be there near Hujjatiyeh. There was a taxi stand, it's still there, and we used to take our taxi from there going home. One day we saw a scene that a taxi came and people got off. There was a lady that got off also. They paid their money and all that and they closed the door and the taxi was going forward. As the taxi was going forward, the lady's abba, that one lady's abba got stuck in the door. And the taxi driver started to drive away. A little bit. And that abba came on. Now she's still wearing clothes. She still has hijab on. Just that the outer abba was pulled, people from everywhere started running. They started running over there and stopped the taxi. All of them from all sides, the storekeepers, the people who are standing, everyone came forward to stop the taxi there. And everyone was shouting and shouting, stop the taxi. The taxi driver said, what happened? This abba got stuck. They returned that abba to her. Across that is the library of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi, just over there. It's right over there. Then an old woman who saw this scene, who was also looking at this scene, started to cry loudly. People said, what's wrong? What happened to you? What happened? Did anything happen? He said, did you see this? He says, yes, we saw, but what happened? He says, oh, where were these people when the daughters of Rasulullah? The daughters of Rasulullah were being taken. Where were these people? My friends, Imam Sajjad missed you so much. On this whole path of Imam Sajjad, he missed you so much. From Karbala to Sham, he was thinking about you. Where are my Shias? Where are my Shias? It is said that when Imam Sajjad was asked where was the most devastating moment for you, three times he says, Asham, Asham, Asham. Three times he said, Sham, Sham, Sham. They asked him, why Sham? What happened in Sham? Imam listed out reasons why Sham was the most devastating place for him. Look at these reasons. I'll just mention them to you and then you give your condolences. Imam Sajjad is saying this. Imam Sajjad is saying the reasons why Sham. Why Sham was hard. The first reason he gives is that we were taken in Sham. We were huddled together. We were huddled together, all the women were huddled together. There were guards around us with spears and they were poking those spears at us. They were poking those spears at us just like you would do that to animals. He said the second reason is this, that when we were taken in Sham, From morning till night, we were being driven around. We were being taken around the streets of Sham, and they had appointed a person in front of us who would keep on saying, "Kill them, kill them." Second reason, what happened in Sham that hurt Imam Sajjad so much. Third reason, he says, Imam Sajjad is saying this. The third reason why Sham is devastating, my friends, hear this, and inshallah you give your condolences. He says that the heads of the Shuhada were placed between the men and women. Women were on one side, the children were on the other side. In between the children and the woman, they placed the heads. You know why? Because every time the woman and children are together, the children would look at the heads. They would embrace their mothers for comfort. Now they separated the children from the woman and they put the heads in between. So now whenever the children are crying, there's no one to comfort them. Ajrukum Allah. Now I'll just mention one more thing that Imam Sajjad said, and then you cry for Imam Sajjad. These 3 days we have time to mourn Imam Sajjad, and we will take our time. My friend, last thing that Imam Sajjad said, and this is it, the last statement I'm making. You give your condolences to Fatima and you cry for her children. No one appreciates that more than her. Imam Sajjad is saying, what are the reasons by which he was devastated in Sham? You know, he says, one of the reasons he says that when we were being taken in these small streets, the people gathered on their roofs and they were throwing fire at us. They're throwing fire at us. The fire was falling on the group. The fire was falling on the group and they were trying to get rid of that fire. They were using their hands. Women were trying to save the children, and all of these things were happening, and one piece of that fire fell on my head. One piece of that fire fell on my head, and because their hands were tied, Ya Hussein.
Sir.